if we could close this door. I don't want that what we discuss here runs out of that door before we go out of the door. Yeah, but we're transparent in these four walls, it's fine. may I take this opportunity to welcome all of you, honorable members, and a special welcome to the chairperson of COGTA. I really appreciate your coming. We say to departments, they must not work in silence. They must work together. And I think it needs to start with us. So it's really appreciated from our side. We, as you know, we are an appropriation. We're not a portfolio committee. But sometimes when we think that we will be discussing issues, we seem just to be scratching the surface, you know, not getting deep. But at the same time, we avoid wanting to pretend to be the portfolio committee and discuss issues that are supposed to be discussed at the portfolio committee. And also, welcome to the officials and everyone that is here. But if I'm just taking a quick look, I see COGTA is here, represented by TG and the team. Treasure is here, TV and the team, and I see FFC is here, DBSA is here. Salga is here. Welcome. Welcome. You know, you're sitting at the right side, you know. So it's us and them, you know, the discussions that are taking place. Okay. No, it's fine. You really all welcome, as we have said. We invited you to this meeting to talk about the other people that are here who are keeping quiet is the Office of the Auditor General. They are also here. Otherwise, we will not be complete without them. You know, the reason for inviting you, we said we wanted to discuss about capacity building for local government. Well, if you're asking about whether the topic is right or wrong, that is the name that we gave. Maybe we could have given it a better name. But the reason for taking that topic is because most of the time, municipalities get a lot of grants from national departments to municipalities and provinces to municipalities. And sometimes you find that those grants or even the equitable share sometimes or services, you see the protest demonstrations around the country. So when we ask ourselves as an appropriation committee, we ask ourselves that what is the problem? Why is that we're not delivering these services to the people? Is it because of lack of capacity or lack of resources or what? In some cases, when municipalities come here or departments come here, and they have not spent, they blame everything to municipalities because there is no capacity with municipalities. But the question that we keep on asking ourselves, and we just dismiss that argument that there is no capacity. Because in terms of the constitution, in terms of your PFMA, your MFMA, all of us have a responsibility towards the municipalities. So it is based on that argument that we thought that we should invite you and say, all of us, what is it? What is this capacity that we're talking about? Sometimes we generalize too much, say there's lack of capacity, but we never really say, what is this capacity that we're talking about? You know, on preparing for this meeting, Chairperson, we got a lot of inquiries, you know, people are saying, what is it? What is this capacity building that you're talking about? You're talking financial resources or what? And ours is ready to say, let's, we are an appropriation and our responsibility, first responsibility is towards finances, but everything else impact on that. So the approach will not mind if it be, if the approach is as general as possible, it will assist us not to ask many questions because we can get a holistic one for the picture. So we would really ask that let's not confine ourselves on financial issues on, because we'll not be able to resolve other matters. That's why then we thought that the development banks of South Africa must also be invited. The FFC must also be invited so that all of us we could share our experiences. But at the end of the day, we just don't want to have a talk shop that we had a good meeting and so on. It must be a meeting that can be able to take resolution so that we know that what is it that we're going to do from here in order to support those municipalities. But on that note, I would really like to, that let's, because we're so many, if we could just do a quick introduction, starting with myself, Shane Sokoli, chairing this this committee.
My name is Chairperson Tenugi, Chairperson Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs.
My name is Kabelo Makita, I'm representing the Office of the Auditor General.
Kabelo Masuku on the Appropriation Committee.
Maria Swart on the Appropriations Committee.
Naren Singh, alternate member on the Appropriations Committee.
My name is Grant Snell, I'm a member of the Appropriations
Committee. D.W. Mavunda, member of the Appropriations Committee.
And Johan Schelderblom, member of the Appropriations Committee.
Ruben Baikis, not a member of Parliament, a member from Selga, keeping the place warm for our Councillor of Wito Nyashwari.
Ngosi Muelo Nongonyana, I'm the member of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs for the committee.
Petition of the Appropriations Committee.
Apollo, you're welcome. I got your apology. No, for today. But we thought that we should wait for you before we start the meeting.
Okay, next day, everyone.
Carl Carlson, I'm with PNG.
Okay. Gashim Sibinda, I'm with Mission Treasury, Officer of Accounting General, FMA Unit.
P. Nicolay, National Treasury, FMA Unit.
Tebogile Ploiki, Parliamentary Liaison, National Treasury.
Mike Silwani, from a member of COP. I'm the provincial head for provincial and municipal government support.
in court.
Alro Africa, Director General in the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Ruben Mazzella with the DBSA Development Fund.
Paul Kivoka, Group Executive, DBSA Development Fund.
Connection Press, Finance and Fiscal Commission, Budget Analysis.
Henry Eckstein, Finance Fiscal Commission.
Can I ask you about this? Kirish Dyer, National Treaty, MFMA Union.
I'm Prince Anirati, Office of Governance, Commission.
Thank you very much. I think everyone has been introduced. We have a smaller program, but before I get to that, Chairperson, you wanted to start. We have a small, what you call, agenda or program. And our first presentation will be done by National Treasury, followed by COCTA, and so forth. I think we all have it in front of us. Kiwi, who is going to present?
I will, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I think this is always a good opportunity that we have to come to share with you some of the initiatives that we have underway in the National Treasury, but also just to share with you that the Division of Revenue Act does provide for a few capacity building grant initiatives as part of the conditional grant mechanisms to local government. There may be very limited additional support in terms of resource allocation through the provincial budgets. So largely allocations are coming through the Division of Revenue Act. The frameworks there, therein contained. We have the two main capacity building grants, which is the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant and the Financial Management Grant. I think that is the kind of window we have, but there's other opportunities for bringing skills and capacity into municipalities through the various other mechanisms. Okay, perhaps you can hear me now. All right. Okay, thanks a lot. I think perhaps we need to ask ourselves a question. There's an echo, so I hope people can hear. What is a functional municipality? I'm gonna stretch my neck if I was a bit more. Cheers. That's fine. Musical cheers will work. Okay, thanks. Perhaps if we can ask ourselves a broader question as part of the committee, what do we mean when we say a functional municipality? And then perhaps the elements that the chair was perhaps talking about earlier starts to be crystallized better. When we're talking capacity, we're talking a number of issues, and we may not be attempting to address all of them here, though, as the Treasury presentation. But let us look at it from a perspective of the human parts of the capacity, the institutional part of it, and various other elements that make up a broad package that is called capacity building. Yes, there's many role players that we have. The other key part of, we believe, in terms of our previous research, suggest that it points directly to the appointment practices at the municipal level. And when we talk capacity, we talk skilled people, we talk people with the necessary know-how and ability to then discharge the obligations that they have, or the responsibilities bestowed on them. I think that is some of the most difficult area that we are dealing with. The legal framework seems to be set okay as far as the broader legal environment is concerned. But when we come to the implementation part is where the challenges emerge. As a national government, I think national government departments as well, and just to be a bit more clear on the matter, certain responsibilities stop at certain points in within the value chain of capacity building. Some are within our control as national departments, but others are outside our control in the system that has been designed. I think that the members probably are fully aware of that. So I won't delve into that, but just to make an attempt at possibly engaging with some of these issues. The first slide that we put up now, pointing to the areas around broader capacity building, is do we have the necessary knowledge and skill in place in all the levels of government, all the spheres of government, and in all the officials that we have placed in those different departments? When we looked at some of the previous research and we talked to the universities, we went around the country talking to the university deans and professors dealing with it, and thankfully the Treasury team is also made up of some learned individuals who are previous lecturers at universities, so they understand that the challenges that they have is stemming from our the broader systemic issues we have in the system of building the appropriate skills. Firstly, when we looked at to understand the curriculum designs at universities that's been taught there, the different areas, versus the local government workplace needs, what is it that is required there? And here again, we stuck to our mandate as a Treasury, which was quite close to the financial management part, so I will talk more on that. And we found that there's still a lot more needs to be done to make sure that these curriculums are brought up to speed to the relevant areas. We are probably 10 years with the PFMA. We're now 6 years on with the MFMA, maybe five with the 1 year grace we've been provided. But when we check the university curriculum, we find that there is no specialized area of talking to the kind of things we need for government finance. The PFMA, is it being taught at the university level? MFMA, is it being taught? So we start to engage with these various role players to be able to bring them on board. That's a big question mark still on the horizon. The next is, of course, the feeder system into that. So it stems from the schooling. How do we get people involved in this? And I'll talk to some of the other issues we have as well. Then we spoke to the local government CETAs. And we said, if you have the funding window available to you and you have these certain mandates, how come is it that we're not getting the pull-through that we require from you, from all the people that are coming through the system, all those institutions that you fund as a CETA? Why are we not seeing the value for money that we can see through the qualifications of people being improved in the sector, whether it's new incumbents or it's current existing employees? So I think that's some of the real issues around mobilizing the resource and scales. And here we were talking to the CETA to try and arrange a memorandum of understanding with those key sector departments. Can be with water affairs, sanitation, finance, cocktail, on various other related projects based. So it starts to improve the broader picture. Then we also asked a role for Palama in all this, as government's academy of learning. What is the scope of Palama to support us in this broader initiative of capacity? How can we fast-track that training? We're also receiving funding from some source or another, largely as well through the fiscus. And then, of course, the DBSA program, I think they are here, and how we can engage further with the developmental mandate. As far as the Treasury is concerned, on the finance side, speaking to our mandate in the MFMA and PFMA, we've done a lot, in terms of regulating the environment, assisting in coordinating some of the initiatives, undertaking certain reviews and key studies that we'll talk through just now, issues, guidance, supporting documents. We have a few copies here that you can see as well. Then we are engaging at the national level through the Department of COCTA, where I think we need to start gearing up with how we can improve the governance arrangements around this. And the improved understanding of a role and responsibility will possibly assist us in improving service delivery. I think that's the biggest challenge we have. How do we get services improved? And as a committee, I think that's part of the big issues around improving oversight, getting the training done there, and then in keeping with that, SAGA's role in developing councillors to be able to engage effectively. I think that's the broader issue. Many of these are done through consultants, many of these kind of training initiatives. But are we really managing and monitoring those contracts closely to see whether we are getting delivery on quality and we're targeting the right issues? I think the next, so the first slide generally, Chairperson and members, is just to flag some of the bigger issues around capacity building and what we need. We get into the broader area again around capacity in terms of the National Treasury's work. We've done issues around many training programs, and we speak to them, the support and monitoring that we have in terms of the framework developed. We have a municipal internship program. We believe it's a flagship program that others can replicate. We have here.
Just to say, maybe I did not indicate to you that because of the number of the presentations,
okay.
I'd really like to tell you, you have up to, for the next 10 minutes.
Okay.
In fact, it's over 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Now I will just speak to the main points, and you can work through the slides. The main issue is on the finance side, how do we get the continuous take-up of the minimum competency regulations for finance officials? And we'll talk to that. Raising the awareness, building skills in the provinces to also assist, working with the CN's Amanja program itself to strengthen the financial management part, and of course making use of some of the key forums we have, which is the CFO forums at the municipal level. There's district-wide forums that have been set up, and that's a good conduit to get other work done. We have the grant that is then there. I'm not going to talk to every dot point given the timing. Just to say that we believe there's the graduate program, which is something that we're proud of and we can share with you more details. There are currently 1,181 graduate interns in the 283 municipalities. We hope to grow this target to 1,500, but thereafter we'd like to see these graduates being permanently employed in the municipalities. It talks to some key critical short gaps. Where we don't see so much of this coming through is in the service delivery sector. Why are we not seeing a similar program in the water and sanitation sector so we can operate those plants correctly in the public works, in the roads, in monitoring, in project management? These are some of the areas that we believe there's still gaps on in terms of the skills. The next slide, we have just to also show you where which provinces we have the details of these should the members require, by name and ID number of all these interns and where they're situated in which municipality. The weakness here is the uptake in the Northwest, which seems to be at around a shortage of about another 42% or 52 interns to reach the target. The others are relatively on track. The Budget and Treasury Office survey that was undertaken to give us a much better understanding on where the gaps lie. The survey was conducted late last year, and we finalized the report around March, April this year. It's based around financial management capacity and constraints. We are looking at further recommendations, and we have written to all municipalities explaining to them the outcomes. and the possible areas of gaps that needs to be improved upon. The next big area we are working on is to strengthen the financial management delegations framework as required by the certain outcomes with the president and other ministers. On the MFMA side, we well advanced of reviewing the finance management delegations in municipalities. So those are some of the big initiatives. The findings of the survey is clear. I think it's captured in slide 7. We talk financial accounting, auditing, risk management, supply chain, the big areas of financial management, how can we improve that. We then continued on the BTO survey findings. Maybe we'll get to slide 9. We'll get a sense. This was just defined as part of the survey. The over 7,566 officials have been surveyed through this process in all municipalities. And you can see the kind of areas of we try to link this with the number of officials against the audit qualifications, and you can see the kind of gaps emerging in the smaller, in the medium to smaller municipalities, which is much more stark, and that's where we're targeting the kind of support. The minimum competencies, we now talk to that. It's in the regulation. I think many of the members are aware of this. It's been there for a while now, and it's being implemented at the moment. Next slide. The regulatory part of it says it's covered. We have got 40 regional-based training providers that are accredited and are now running the program, including the DBSA's Bulandela Academy, and we're talking to Paloma to gear up. During our research, we also have identified serious gaps at the very lower levels. People doing basic accounting stuff, counting cash, recording cash, putting it through the systems, right, doing the proper accounting treatments. And here we have been discussing with the SICA groups. There's 600 learners on the SICA program that have completed the current program. This is below school metric levels, so it's a basic NQF level 3 level, just to get people at the lowest level to understand, and that's part of the building blocks of what we put in place. You may understand the minimum competencies is targeting NQF level 5 and 6, which is at the metric or at a university level. So we're saying that the next take-up of this lower level will be 300 learners in all these different, you can see there, what we have on the slide, that was slide 11. The program then covers slide 12 is basically the different areas of the structured regulated program now, which is strategic management and budgeting and performance management, all grouped into those unit standards, municipal accounting and risk management, governance and legislation that talks to all the different legislation that we have in local government and trains people on that. Cost and capital planning is another big area. IT support, project management, supply chain, and PPPs are the different disciplines we managed to group it on. Registrations on this program, you will find there's 4,900 officials registered in 9-10, almost 3,000 in 10-11, and continuous learning is taking place. Many informal training sessions have happened in municipalities. They can give you some massive numbers here. So it says that, you know, when we go out to municipalities, we are targeting municipal officials themselves. You do find, though, in certain training programs where people are not the relevant people that are being sent by municipalities. That's our own problem that we need to try and fix, and we're trying to look at innovative measures by making even municipal managers sign that the relevant official will come, or else they will pay for the cost of the training themselves. Some of the incentives we need to start to build into the system to improve it. The informal training, we just gave you two examples. 1,373 officials on the budgets and reporting, and the accounting side, 1,082 scrap statements. The next slide, and I'll be again very quick. I think we basically covered the initiatives we're now underway doing is strengthening the provincial treasuries to be able to implement more of the MFMA directly, because if you see the challenges that sitting where we are at the national level, definitely more scope needs to be provided at the provinces. We've engaged with them for the last 2 years. We've even given them additional resources now to deal with this at the large budget cycle. So at the moment, there's 9 coordinators in each municipality. They have a team. And just from my memory, there's over 600 people in the provinces, both COCTA and Treasury, that are working on municipal finance. We've done that research, it's not in the slides, but there's over 600 people. And we keep skilling and training them even further to render better support to municipalities. Okay, I think we can move past this one. Financial grant, we can move past that one. Financial outcome, this is basically the grant conditions. Members would know.
Don't move too fast on those.
I was mindful of your 10 minutes.
Because I think it's important that people must know that what are the objectives of those grants.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. We're saying as per the grant conditions, we want the appointment of a minimum of 5 graduate interns, which we just spoke about earlier. We say we want the appointment of a qualified CFO, that is in terms of the minimum qualifications. We said we need to establish, and this is applicable by 2013, all people must be appropriately trained. We gave them a 5-year window to be able to be trained correctly. Establishment of supply chain and internal audit units. The internal audit units are key for the internal control measures, and that is the real gap. We are finding through the research that many municipalities are not using the skills in the internal audit units that they should, optimally. So the advice rendered by the internal audit units and the internal audit committees is not being taken on board as they should. If they did, we would have definitely improved audit outcomes, we believe. Ongoing reviews and revisions of the MFMA implementation plans. All municipalities are required to provide an implementation plan. We've seen many implementation plans and we've given comments back. Mostly what municipalities do is they change the date at the bottom of the plan. Instead of going through the plan themselves to say, yes, we have this delegation in place, yes, we have this institutional still operating today. Because as you know, over the last few years, changes happen in a municipal environment much more than in a national and provincial environment. And that really creates a problem for us to effective implementation of financial reforms. So that's a fundamental part of it. The reporting is improving. The area around financial systems and the multi-year budgets, we spoke about the training involved in that. We have developed a new annual report template, which we are testing out in 2 municipalities, which will probably link much more closer the IDP strategic paths to actual delivery on the ground. So it's going to expose a number of municipalities for in a way that they deliver services based on the targets they prepare for themselves. We're piloting in two municipalities at the moment. Compliance with the MFMA competencies we spoke about. Audit outcomes and processes, we've developed a means to get better information, working with the team in the province and with the COCTA Operation Clean Audits. We're working as a team to get that. The biggest challenge we have, Chair, is this preparation of a financial recovery plan. It is unfortunate or fortunate. We have a chapter that deals with the preparation of a sound financial recovery plan. It's been well thought through by committee members, many of them in this room as well, in developing that. Unfortunately, many of the interventions are not based on a financial recovery plan being a basic requirement. And this is where the kind of gaps emerge. But we have a unit in the Treasury now that is being beefed up to go and support those type of interventions. We've helped about 4 municipalities already develop a structured financial recovery plan, which is time-bound, it gives you deliverables, it gives you dates, it gives you key issues. So that's where we are. The broader outcomes on the FMG, I think, Chair, because of my time, I will say we need to improve broadly on financial management. It's all the issues, all the elements of it. There's a project that has now started as well in the Treasury to look at the revenue side. We have not done too much work on that recently, but now that we are rendering direct facilitation support for the payment of services, bulk services and the others, we're now seeing many of these revenue issues that are in need of direct intervention. It's being picked up in a number of areas through our work combined. The FMG outputs, again. Thank you, Chair. All right. FMG allocations then, Chair. On that place, it's on the slide 20, is clear. the spending patterns are at 86%. We want to show this committee those municipalities that have not supplied the information that was required. As a treasury and as a unit that I'm responsible for is managing of this grant, and we must be able to say that, you know, we've not allocated funds, we've not transferred to certain municipalities because they've not complied with the basic requirements. And these are here, page on slides 21 and slides 22. Say, thank you. Okay. it's a tough issue that when we have to comply with all the legal framework as well as make follow-ups that is here. So we've done that. And then just in concluding then, Chair, I think the main issues that we want to then move on, slides are clear, is just to get to the broader strategy of we grow the program, we engage and liaise with the stakeholders to be more responsive to what is required. We talk to the various sectors, but perhaps Kokta can talk to that more. We look at how we can develop further the reforms and support each other in making that happen. We are looking at the Accountant General's office in the nine provinces to play a bigger role in the issues around internal audits, risk management, and accounting treatments, and so forth. And then there is a cluster approach in engaging with municipalities. We have now engaged with three big municipalities through a cluster approach, and it seem to be bearing fruit now that we're bringing all the disciplines together when we engage. But it again depends on the willingness and ability of those municipalities to want to embrace this reform in that way. Chair, let me conclude there. And thank you and the committee.
Thank you very much. The powers vested in me, TG, I would like DBSA to start, followed by Salga.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity to present to honorable members of the House. Chair, as honorable members are aware, the DBSA was initially set up in 1983 to promote economic development in the erstwhile self-governing and independent states of the TVVC. In 1997, Chair, the DBSA was reconstituted by an Act of Parliament, Act 13 of 1997, to promote a good...
Excuse me. I will ask these members to get into the internet and go to the background.
Okay.
Who could that get to the point?
Yes, Chair. Chair, our mandate as a bank is to promote economic development, growth and human resources development, and institutional capacity building in Southern Africa. Chair, as shown on the slide, the roles of the DBSA have been evolving since 1995, in line with the government's national priorities and their plan of action. And since the beginning of 2007, the DBSA products and services have been redefined under the five roles of financier, partner, advisor, implementer, and integrator. The roles of implementer and integrator were initiated by government through the Project Consolidate Initiative, and later government commissioned the DBSA to execute them through the DBSA Development Fund under the Chinzamanji program. Here, the DBSA Development Fund is a Section 21 company and a subsidiary 100% owned by the DBSA. It provides, as shown on the slide, four products and services, namely expertise, grant funding, development facilitation, and local economic development to address institutional weaknesses in the municipalities. Here, the fund houses five major programs. The Senza Manje program, the Vlindgela Academy, agencies, rural development, and community development facilitation, through which it delivers its products and services to municipalities and communities. In terms of the high-level mandated areas of support for the program, as we shall see in a little bit more detail, the Senza Manje program deploys experts to low-capacity municipalities. The Vulingera Academy offers accredited training to municipalities and government departments. The agency's program assists donors and development partners to implement development initiatives in the country. Rural development prepares and implements economic and institutional turnaround strategies, social and economic infrastructure in rural municipalities. And last on that slide, Chair, community development facilitation undertakes social mobilization of vulnerable communities towards common development priorities, which act as an input from those communities into the IDP. Here, an analysis of South African socioeconomic and institutional backlogs by the bank based on the State of Local Government Report 2009 shows that unemployment stands at 28% by the narrow definition, but as high as 45% on the high definition. The poverty rate at an average of about 40%, but higher in rural areas at about 70%. And infrastructure backlog for electricity at 27.2% and sanitation 23.1%. Here also that poor quality audit reports in municipalities are sitting at 54% of municipalities, and that 20% of municipalities have been declared to be in financial distress, but also share that 23% of the households live in informal settlements. On every share, we see that the vacancy rates in municipalities, especially low capacity municipalities, are sitting at 33%. The DBC did also conduct a study of 15 municipalities, a mixture of metro cities, medium capacity and low capacity municipalities, and our estimate is that operations and maintenance backlogs in those 50 municipalities, representing about 50% of the households in the country, is in the region of about 122 billion. In this regard, Chair, our analysis of the human, institutional and technical challenges in municipalities is that of insufficient funds for projects to address infrastructure backlogs, the lack of efficient financial management and billing systems, low revenue base and challenges with debt management, but also supply chain management challenges, high vacancy rates in key positions, performance management and lower levels of communication and feedback to communities. We're also picking up a lack of adequate planning and implementation capacity in addition to unresolved land claims. In that regard, Chair, the Senza Manje program was conceptualized to provide hands-on support for project implementation, human and institutional capacity building to local government. The Senza Manje program prioritized deployment to low-capacity municipalities, municipalities with low MIG expenditure, but also municipalities with financial management challenges. To ensure integration amongst departments with constitutional mandates in the different sectors, since the National Working Committee was set up, and on it serves the National Treasury, COCTA, SALGA, and Water Affairs. Chair, the Sinzamanje Annual Capacity Building Business Plan is driven by municipal deployment in the fields of technical, finance, and planning. For sustainability of our interventions, Chair, deployees provide on-job skills transfer to officials in their respective areas of expertise. Given that Sinzamanje is deployed in low-capacity poor municipalities, the vacancy rates are high. Therefore, the deployees are paired with young professionals. for training towards registration by their professional bodies, and ultimately for absorption by municipalities. The Vuyenzele Academy Chair is accredited by the local government leader to deliver public sector training. In the course of the on-job skills transfer to officials, deployees identify complementary needs for classroom training. The Vuyenzele Academy provides the recommended public sector training to both officials and counselors. And in collaboration with the Academy, the deployees assist officials and counselors to collect portfolios of evidence required for certification. The Shinzamani Program Chair also sets aside an annual capacity building grant funding budget, and this is to address capacity gaps identified by deployees in low capacity rural poor municipalities. And this is mainly in the development of systems, plans, and conduction of feasibility studies. Likewise, Chair, capacity constraints also manifest in provincial departments. As a result, since the money is deployed in provincial departments of water affairs and the environment, and this is to provide support to the processing of technical reports, especially for water and sanitation projects. In DFG is also Chair to support registration of MIG projects, but also in provincial treasuries for to support financial monitoring and support. Here we are currently in discussions with the Department of Environmental Affairs, and that is to support the department in the processing and fast-tracking the processing of environmental impact assessments. Lastly, here on the slide, we are also piloting the operations and maintenance program, and we've chosen three pilots, one in low, one in medium, and one in high-capacity municipalities, and the intention is to collect practical lessons of experience, which, if are successful, then we can roll out to other municipalities. Chair, Kinzamanga is now deployed in 199 municipalities, which is an increase from the 172 municipalities we reported at the end of 08-09 financial year. As indicated on that slide, Chair, Kinzamanga municipalities are significantly B3 and B4 low-capacity municipalities, which are mainly project-consolidated, rural nodes, as well as Izimbizo municipalities, which were identified by the Presidency. Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo have the highest number of rural municipalities supported by the program. Chair, I now will hand over to Ruben Matlala to take us through the Sinzamanje deployment, expenditure, key initiatives, and impact.
Thank you. I'll just go quickly through some of the things that the employees are doing on a day-to-day basis in the municipality. Okay, today, I think we've got a workforce of about 550 deployees, deployed in various municipalities in the country. There are about 180 technical deployees who are mainly engineers. We've got about 72 finance deployees, 28 planning deployees. We also have 145 young professionals who work with deployees on a day-to-day basis as part of the skills transfer. But also, Chair, we are now have deployed apprentices in the municipalities, and today we've got about 165 who deals with operations and maintenance of infrastructure on a day-to-day basis in the municipalities. Chair, in terms of funding for the Sinzamanje program, this program is funded by both National Treasury and the DBSA. The National Treasury puts 70% of the budget, and the DBSA contributes 30% of the budget. In the past 3 years, Chair, each and every year we managed to spend over 85% of this budget, but also to overcommit the 15% that was budgeted for. The key drivers in terms of the budget of the Sinzamanje program is mainly remuneration, which is mainly all the 550 deployees that we have on the ground, including young professionals. Chair, this slide I think focuses mainly on the key capacity building areas that our deployees are focusing on a day-to-day basis in the municipalities. Our finance deployees, they focus mainly around assisting municipalities with financial planning, financial reporting, dealing with the audit issues, revenue enhancement, data management, and system compliance.
our technical degrees who are mainly engineers, they are focusing on the project, you know, implementation, but mainly the assisting municipalities with the planning of infrastructure projects to make sure that, you know, the MEC and CAPEX is committed over, you know, a period of time. But also we deal with project management and operations and maintenance, you know, issues on a day-to-day basis. Our planners, you know, in the municipalities care, they assist municipalities to develop, you know, credible, you know, IDPs based on the corporate guidelines, but also to assist municipalities with local economic development plans, but also to assist them with the development of special, you know, development frameworks and land use management systems. We do chair focus on institutional capacity building, and our strategy there is mainly to win the on-the-job, you know, training. We ensure that the employees work with officials in the municipalities on a day-to-day basis. When they do financial statements, you are saying that, you know, they must work with people in the finance department to develop financial statements, to develop budget, so that when we meet the municipality, the officials can be able to continue, you know, on their own. So the young professional program, you know, that we spoke about, you know, it is a structured, you know, training program. I think as TV has indicated, you know, earlier on, you know, to say that we've got challenges, more especially in the engineering, you know, profession, where we don't have, you know, lots of registered, you know, engineers. So we've developed, you know, this program to make sure that we come up with a three-year program to recruit graduates, you know, from University of Technologies and universities to put them on a three-year structured program that we're implementing with the South African Institute of Civil Engineers, to make sure that after a three-year period, this graduate becomes professional engineer. And the idea is, one, it's for them to be absorbed in those municipalities so that we can meet some qualified, you know, engineers, you know, in the municipalities. On the apprentice program, Chair, we are doing the same as well. We are recruiting students from FET colleges who are qualified. We are putting them on a structured, you know, program to assist them, you know, to write, you know, trade tests so that they can be qualified artisans. And the areas that we are looking at is bricklaying, plumbing, you know, to deal with water leakages in municipalities, filter, waterworks, electricians, and motor mechanics. The idea is all changed to leave, you know, these people in the municipalities after a training program so that they can be involved, you know, in the operations and maintenance of infrastructure in the municipalities. In terms of training through the Bulindlela Academy, most of this program we're implementing in partnership with National Treasury and COFTA Chair. We are running a number of training programs which are accredited by CETA around, you know, financial management, around integrated development planning, local economic development, management and leadership. In the last financial year, over 10,000 officials, you know, from the local government sector and the public sector in general benefited, you know, through the training provided by the Bulindlela, you know, Academy. So this slide here just highlights some of the key initiatives in finance, you know, that we are doing as part of the capacity building. The major one is around, you know, assisting municipalities with the implementation of MFMA, and also the issues around, you know, cash flow management and reporting. As we've indicated earlier on as well, that we've got deployees in the provincial treasuries, also in national treasury, and in provincial COFTAs as well, you know, to support municipalities of various MFMA, you know, initiatives. Shall now move to other, you know, key initiatives, you know, that we are working on. As Paul has indicated, the operations and maintenance is the latest flagship program, you know, that we are implementing, you know, as part of the, you know, support to municipalities, with the emphasis on the operations, routine and periodic maintenance of water, sanitation, roads and infrastructure. And in this regard, our role is to support the municipalities with the capacity to plan, to organize, to implement and manage infrastructure operations and maintenance in a sustainable way. So we're doing this also by deploying experts and also the artisans that I prefer to chair in terms of implementing the operations and the maintenance initiative. We are also implementing a program together with DWA and COCTA around the water and wastewater treatment works. And this also mainly involves us deploying experts, you know, to the municipalities who've got challenges with their water and wastewater treatment works to assist them, you know, with the planning and also the refurbishment, you know, of those schemes, you know, that are having challenges. We are focusing in 5 provinces now in terms of in this initiative around the wastewater treatment works. We are also supporting DWA with the challenges of bulk, you know, infrastructure,
we've deployed a number of experts in Dwa regional offices, you know, to assist them to plan, you know, the bulk infrastructure project, but also to project manage, you know, various, you know, bulk infrastructure projects. Because the challenge that most municipalities are facing is mainly access, you know, to bulk, you know, to make sure that, you know, they reticulate, you know, infrastructure. We are running a number of water and sanitation programs, Chair, and the one which is advanced is with the Northwest, you know, province, where we are putting a package, you know, to support, you know, the entire province with water and sanitation programs. In the last financial year, we've approved funding to avail of 100 million to make sure that we bridge, you know, that facility. And we are now in discussion with the Northwest province to put another facility with the aim of dealing with all the water and sanitation backlogs in the Northwest, you know, province. Okay, this is mainly the last, you know, slide, you know, from our side, you know, to indicate some of the outputs, you know, and the impact, you know, indicators, you know, that we are delivering on an annual basis. And this shows mainly from the last, you know, 3 financial years, the number of people that we've trained in finance, on the job, in technical, and also the systems, you know, that we've put in the municipalities to make sure that our interventions are sustainable, you know, in the long term. Also, Chair, I think we are indicating here the MIG and CAPEX infrastructure grants that our employees have facilitated, you know, together with the municipalities. And also we are indicating some of the households, you know, that have benefited from a number of the projects that we've implemented. So our support, Chair, I think in the national and the municipalities is mainly hands-on, you know, support that we are doing, you know, through the employees, but also we are doing various training intervention, you know, through the Bulindela Academy. This concludes, Chair, our submission in terms of the DBSA capacity building initiative. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You will get an award at the end of the program for just doing under your 30 minutes time. It will help us because we would like COPTA to have as much time as possible. Now let's take Salga.
Not looking at the financial aspects thereof. It's more general and more broad, as you requested. And I assume that everybody at this level understands exactly what SALGA is all about. So I'm going straight into the contents of the presentation. I think we all appreciate the local government context. But just to focus, Chair, perhaps on some of the LGTAS interventions that have been identified and some of the problems around capacity building that have been identified in the Cabinet adopted local government turnaround strategy, which indicates that there are a number of capacity constraints that we need to deal with. Among them is poor skills base and lack of training and career pathing in local government. Skills development programs, committed training in many municipalities has come strongly to the fore during that local government assessment report, particularly under investment in people, where technical management and leadership skills are required. And this is where some of our interventions are targeted. The root causes of some of the problems are also identified. The core areas of concern being serious leadership and governance challenges in municipalities and inadequate human resource capital, as indicated by the DBSA, to ensure professional administrations, positive relations between labor, management, and councils. 5 strategic objectives are then identified. But I think I'm not going to cover that. The DBSA has covered a number of those aspects. Just with regards to the skills and the capacity of municipal officials, the following questions are really what needs to guide us in this respect. Are we recruiting and retaining enough municipal officials? And are these officials qualified and experienced, as indicated by, I think, both Treasury and the DBSA? The vacancy rates in municipalities against the averages, organizational development and filling of critical posts in particular, the CFOs, the municipal managers, still the number of vacancies in that regard, and then recruitment and retention policies for the employees at local government level. Also, another problem that needs to be addressed is the level of experience of municipal managers and CFOs. A number of those only have 1 or 2 years' experience at most in some cases in local government, so that is a major challenge involving professional administration. For example, do the municipal manager and the CFO have a tertiary qualification? And we found that to be wanting in many respects. In a very high percentage. I think this is a slide that the BBFA spoke to around individual capacity, institutional capacity, and environmental capacity in terms of a multi-dimensional approach. I won't focus on that. The key strategic anchors of SELGA's capacity-building initiatives is then to stimulate thought leadership to build capacity at local government level, such through practice analysis and strategic research. The advocacy being influencing capacity building and policy and practices, and advocate for effective stakeholder engagements and influence around these issues. Coordination, facilitation and integration of players in the capacity building space, and authentication, the standardization and quality assurance of capacity building programs, and integration towards efficiency and optimization. But again, Chair, these are some of the things that was spoken about earlier. I'm going to skip that slide. Our skills programs, I will speak to them in greater depth just now on executive leadership and so on. Now just an overview of the capacity building projects, some of them that SELGA has, the local democracy and local governance program, LODLOC. It's a support democratic consolidation process in South Africa and improves the competency of politicians and officials. Because I think one of the issues that we identified as well was that there was, of course, SELGA is geared towards supporting to councillor support, often to the neglect of officials in municipalities, and that's where some of the key concerns lay. So this program is focused on both politicians and officials in the field of local democracy and governance. About 100 have been trained so far. It has recently started, including 6 from Zimbabwe, Botswana, and Namibia as well. And the partnership is with the Swedish Association of Local Authorities. Then the agenda mainstreaming and local governance project with Swedish partner Gemlog. It's aimed at building the capacity of South African local authorities in gender equality and leadership, and 32 have been signed in this particular pilot. Then we have the Local Labour Forum, a program aimed at restoring the relationship between the employer and organized labour. Of course, the much publicized the much publicized strikes in local government. I think this program is aimed at restoring and rebuilding that relationship, including at the national level, as you say. The Municipal Skills Development Program, this is on Microsoft IT. It's an initiative to assist local government to use technology more effectively. And it talks about e-governance. The focus here is on e-governance in terms of incorporating communities in the ordinary work of councils through e-governance effectively and efficiently. So 875 officials have been trained so far. The partnership here is with Microsoft SA, the Post Office, as well as the Development Bank of Southern Africa. The Council Induction Program, this is the program every 5 years that SELGA runs after the elections. In 2006, 7,000 newly elected councillors were inducted on roles and responsibilities, the legal framework that they work in, and this was in partnership with COCTA, the GTZ, and the local government CETA. Of course, the next elections, we would target all of the councillors to make sure that we cover that spectrum entirely. On councillor development, 8,794 participants have been trained on the program so far. And this one is in a partnership with the local government CETA. Chair, I haven't done the finances in terms of breaking down exactly, but it's to give an overview of what is there. The Executive Leadership Management Development Program, a total of 2,055 participants have graduated from this program since its inception in 2006 to date. The local government CETA is the partner there. And then LODLOC, the participants of 32, I've spoken about the project description, local government CETA, SALA, IDA, and so on. GEMLOG 28, again local government, CETA, SALA, IDA, and then the municipal finance program, 1,170, have been trained so far, again in partnership with local government, CETA, DBSA, and it should be COCTA, not DBLG. The ward committee training, 2,580 ward committee members have been trained so far, and that is a program run by SALGA. Particularly, we focus on understanding the role of the ward committee vis-a-vis the CDWs, and that, you know, that more focus needs to be placed there, and yeah, particularly the work of the DBSA is important. The municipal governance certificates, 373 of those have been awarded, with the University of Johannesburg and the local government CETA being the partners there through sponsorship. The council induction program, as I say, in 2006, a total number of 7,000 were inducted nationwide. This was in conjunction with the University of Johannesburg, again. And then just to delve into one of our projects more particularly, just to go into a bit more depth, the P3 program. Is sponsored by the Swedish Association of Municipalities, and it started in 2008 with the Swedish Association of Authorities and Regions, as I say, SIDA, aimed at enhancing the capacity of SALGA itself to work with selected municipalities in developing capacity at local level. So the project leaders have been placed at SALGA itself in terms of technical support. To then train those in SALGA to assist municipalities. And I will go through those selected municipalities shortly. And just in terms of the makeup, the European Commission grants comprise 75% of the funding, and the remaining 25% is then provided by the CEDA, with SALA being the lead partner. Now, the program aimed at promoting an inclusive and empowered society in partner countries, and two of its specific objectives are to facilitate interaction between municipalities and non-state actors in different contexts and support an increased role for local government in decentralization processes. Now, that is not a major problem in South Africa with the constitutional local government system that we have. So it's more focused on the second aspect of strengthening the capacity of civil society organizations and local authorities, in our case municipalities, with a view to facilitating their participation in defining sustainable development strategies and in implementing actions aimed at poverty reduction. And I will illustrate how we are trying to achieve that through the various selected municipalities. Now, the two EU grants which enable this program are Transparent Local Governments, the Toolkit, and Local Leadership for Growth. At its basic level, this partnership is intended to assist municipalities' efforts to better improve their service to constituents by promoting local economic development partnerships in municipalities using analytical and participatory tools. And promoting transparent governance using approaches which enhance good practice in municipal financial management and citizen orientation. It has two components, the promotion of local economies and the enhancement of transparent local government. The model is based on each country having a project manager supported by process facilitators who work closely with the municipalities, and these are then based at SALGA itself. Now, the following municipalities were selected in this respect. The municipalities were in the Eastern Cape, Ilundini, Senku, and Maletswai, municipalities in the Jomgabi District Municipality, and in Sika, Yetu, Lukanji, and Emalahleleni municipalities in the Kretani District Municipality. In the Free State, for this partnership, were Naledi in the Masayo District Municipality, Wokare, and Kopanong in the Harib District Municipality, and Setoto in Thabo Mofokeng District Municipality. In the Western Cape, we have Tiavasa School of Cape Agulhas in the Overberg District Municipality, as well as Hesekwa and Mossel Bay in the Eden District Municipality. Funding sources, just briefly on this, the following organizations have been approached for funding for capacity building programs. Some of them have kickstarted already, and others we are still in negotiations with. SALGA and local government, CETA signed an MOU on funding capacity building activities. I've spoken to some of those in the previous slide. The LMPD generating revenue for capacity building programs. CEDA supporting SALGA's capacity building programs for member municipalities. The DBSA changed leadership, and the new manager is being engaged on possible funding and collaborations on capacity building, and we would use this opportunity as well to engage with them. And the following are resources raised during the year under review, just to give a broad indication of where we are at. Now, some of those capacity building initiatives beyond, I think the key focus area for us would be on 2011 and beyond, in terms of addressing some of those core challenges I spoke to in the beginning. The next council induction program, planning for the council induction commenced, and currently there is a steering committee that I'm part of as well to address four phases. And now we've reviewed the 2006 council induction and planning for the 2011 council induction program has commenced in terms of looking at the quality of the material that was used to train councillors, provide support to them, and so on. Now, the following four phases for the council induction program have been mapped out, and these are in conjunction, as I say, with the universities as well in terms of providing quality support to our councillors as they come in 2011, just after the election. Phase one would focus on towards a good councillor, and a lot of this would look at the legal framework, for example, around governance and IGR in local government relative to the other spheres of government, understanding the roles and responsibilities of that particular municipality. Not if it's a metro, then the metropolitan functions. If it's a district municipality, then those relative to local municipalities and so on. So that is phase one. Phase two, then look at the material development. Phase three, coordination of sector departments who are needed to assist in the rollout of the program. And then phase four focuses on municipal orientation of councillors itself. The training manual, as I indicated, is being reviewed, and this will be completed in February 2011. We hope to have that completed sooner. Induction plans would then be communicated in September 2010, so we would hope to have it almost finalized by then. And finally, seeking accreditation of the council induction program, critically for us. We have also conducted impact assessments on international programs of a similar ilk, and develop and implement a regional collaboration strategy on capacity building. This is one of the initiatives that we would need to start as well. That assessment on international programs is quite advanced. I think it would be one of the areas that we'd want to focus on beyond 2011 as well, in terms of municipalities' engagements internationally and so on, and developing council understanding and capacity in that regard. Now, just some considerations. In the past, a bigger external focus was placed on the capacitation of councillors, as I indicated, Stelga being focused particularly on councillor support rather than municipal staff. But in 2011, of course, we have to recognize that it will not only bring new councillors, but also new municipal managers and managers reporting to those municipal managers, who need to be capacitated and skilled in developmental local government and the principles of the public service. Now, SALGA, of course, supports the principle of professionalization of municipal administration and the minimum competencies for managers, and I think the DG of COCTA will speak to that perhaps. Also, a key consideration for us is the consideration and the retention of scarce skills. Is critical and needs to be addressed, and SALGA is a key partner in this, in also in terms of crafting those retention strategies at local government level, in terms of what is realistic and what can be achieved. Career pathing for employees, also we feel that needs to be strengthened at the local government level. Now, just some proposals in that respect. While SALGA champions a comprehensive capacity building program, much more is needed, I think, to improve the skills required by politicians and officials in terms of both governance and associated accredited programs. We need to invest in accredited capacity building programs for both politicians and officials. And as I indicated, our focus mainly in the past has been on councillors and politicians. Certain municipalities are battling to recruit the requisite skills due to a lack of response, either due to not being able to afford the salaries or to attract those skilled individuals to their sometimes rural localities. it is necessary to provide attractive career paths and associated incentives for municipal staff. But yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we would also need to look at during in crafting those retention strategies, what is realistic in terms of if a municipality is, for example, a very small rural municipality, it is unlikely that skills are going to be attracted there or retained, in fact, no matter how much economic incentives there are. If the necessary socioeconomic conditions are not prevailing, then it is unlikely that professionals are going to be attracted to those municipalities. So we also need to be realistic in addressing that challenge. There's a need to adopt a stronger approach to regulating those who enter the municipal service, and I think the UCLA spoke to some of these, that those entering the pool have the requisite skills, and this is again one of the key outputs in terms of the professionalization of municipal administrations. Sienza Manje project that the DBSA spoke to, support could be extended to more municipalities, especially smaller municipalities, as I mentioned, who cannot attract and retain skills, and explore as well. One of the options is shared services. A number of small municipalities have been very successful in this respect in the Eastern Cape province, for example, and we would need to look at extending that program to support them. Expanding existing surveys, and I know work is being done here on the MDB capacity assessment, and we could extend or expand the existing surveys such as those to include a greater focus on professional management and leadership skills. Also, as we have done, is to actively discourage political interference, influence in the appointment of staff locally, and I think legislation, the DG of COP will speak about legislation in that respect as well, to limit that practice, which results in politically accepted appointments at the expense of the necessary and relevant skills, obviously to the detriment of the municipalities concerned with regard to governance and administration financially and otherwise. So, Chair, in sum, a very short presentation, but we would need to, from SALGA itself as well as the partners here, we would need to focus on more creative responses to address scarce skills in local government, such as partnering with civil society, private sector, and shared services options, exploring some of those. And I've laid out some of the sector institutions that we are seeking to work with, and also some of the options that we need to explore. With regard to shared services in some smaller municipalities, particularly those struggling with viability questions and so on. In moving forward on skills development, specific attention needs to be given to career pathing, we feel, defining and enforcing minimum, and particularly around the enforcement of minimum competencies for certain posts, particularly the municipal managers, CFOs, managers reporting to municipal managers. Applicable programs for councillors and relevant management and leadership training programs. In some, SALGA has a critical role to play in ensuring that the necessary skills are developed to effect a professionalized local government sphere, but that would obviously be in conjunction with the partners sitting around the table. A very short presentation, but to the point. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I hear you beating your own drum. It's fine. You didn't report on the last page of the South African Airways. It was erroneous. This page was erroneously distributed to people. It's not supposed to be there. Honorable Singh was trying to make an invitation to this conference. Okay. No one else now except you. Over to you, yourself.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and also the Chairperson of. Chairperson, we have distributed copies of our presentation, but there is an updated one that may be coming, but it is about 80-90% the same. Chairperson, I'm going to ask my colleague, Mr. Dumisani Ngadi, to make the presentation. his responsibility is for capacity building. I was going to propose a tea break here, but it's not my fault. No, Chair, no, that's fine. So I hope members have got the copies that we've distributed. Copies were made, yes, that's correct. Yes. As I said, we may just get an updated one. Chairperson, maybe what I should do.
You're right out off with him from the table. You're right out from the table. Oh, yeah. I need to pop in the presentation.
Thank you.
Honorable Ramachaga, you know the police during those days, they would say we give you 5 minutes. And that 5 minutes was 5 seconds actually to disperse. You know, if you didn't disperse within those 5 seconds, you thought that it was 5 minutes and the dogs would be on you. So I think that our 5 minutes is 5 seconds, you know.
Members are not here.
No, they are there.
Baba Ramachaga, I'm going to deploy somebody up to Zagunaya Dayaba.
Oh, no, thank you.
If there is a boy, they do stand up.
This is appropriation.
This is inappropriate. This is one must wear.
No special dimension. No, this one is appropriation.
You must not be good.
Not what I'm trying to say. Not what I'm saying.
What I cannot be the same. I see a shame that it's
done. No. Kind of. Wait.
Look, mom is saying everyone is supposed to get up for his son. And the devil takes time.
They're not devil, yeah. Mantan. Dog. 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 Calling you, it's a person to order. He's talking about the devil. There's not devil here. Nah, I've got to pray. He mustn't want the devil.
Titi, I hope that I see that Mr. Mgadi. Oh, I see you, eh? He's going to present. Well, over to you. TG says we must earn our tickets to Cape Town. Then over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say two things by way of background. One is that I think it was quite useful to listen to the other partners and colleagues present, because really what we wanted... Because really what we wanted to do was to give that overview of some of the things that we think are happening in, that we think is happening in the entire sector as a whole. So this is really a global presentation. Secondly, what we've tried to do was just to divide this presentation into three parts. The first part is just to remind us of our core mandate around local government, because everything that we have heard here today and will be hearing is about giving effect to the constitutional and mandate of local government and also to the white paper. So it's important just to remind ourselves of that. So that's the first part. The second part, we thought it's also useful at a very high level just to remind ourselves of what has happened in the period from 2000, because we've been doing a lot of things since 2000. And then the last part of the presentation, we thought we'll just take the committee right up to where we are right now with the local government turnaround strategy, because we do believe that there are one or two things that we want to do differently. So, Chairperson, with those few words, I want to hand over to Mr. Mgadi. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. As the Chair has laid out, our presentation is in three parts. Looking back at the foundations document, the policy framework, legislation, and so forth, and then back from 2000 up to 2008, and then now, as we try to... Yes, and now as we try to take stock of the lessons that we've learned over time and try to see how we can do things differently, given the advantage of hindsight. The context starts with the capital sensitivity background, the regulatory framework, as I've said. And then first, we start by saying, this capital building, the mandate, where does it come from? The constitution of the council says itself clearly that the national government, together with provinces, have got the responsibility to really enhance the capacity of municipalities in order that they can really deliver on their mandate, perform all their functions and duties, and deliver to our people out there. And then the white paper developed in 1998 was to find out to translate this into policy. And then it says we need to really work together with broader communities out there, because it puts emphasis on the concerns of developing the local governance. Today, we really need to try and see what we can change the situation on the ground. But again, we cannot do it alone. We need to really engage with all the partners out there to improve the quality of life. Getting the policy framework, we need to come out with legislation that will therefore help us to really roll out the program, that will really help us to create that enabling local environment to really implement on the policy statement that comes from the white paper. This slide just tried to really put in summation the whole suite of legislation that needed to be rolled out. You can see from the Constitution to the white paper to the Division of Revenue and then the legislative framework. As you can see, quite a number of suite of legislation that we needed to really have in place in order to be able to deliver on the mandate of local government. Secondly, what are the interventions, therefore, that we've done since 2000. 2000, we will recall that it was the ushering in of the new local government system in the country. So we were learning from scratch. We need to see what we can do moving forward based on the white paper process that we've developed. All the critical interventions and the flagship programs we put in place. But the most critical one that we have was process consolidate. Because at this time, we have new local government systems in place, new municipalities, some different in capacity, with different challenges that we're now experiencing that we begin to implement. And then we realized that we needed an intervention that is more targeted. And then we came up with process consolidate that was there between 2004 and 2008. What is it supposed to do? It was supposed to try and see what can we do immediately instead of long term, just to have an immediate turnaround in terms of the challenges that were there by providing the hands-on support, by bringing expertise where it was lacking municipalities, and really try to build that multi-state capacity. Part of it was also look at the broader systems that was the systematic issues of policy, fiscal relations, institutional matters, broader issues of systems, because we needed to have the systems in place in order to have sustainable capacity. There are certain lessons that we drew from present consolidate. One was that, yes, there is value in the use of open support. It is perfect because we're able to engage at the ground level, at the core phase with municipalities and try to really provide support and change the constraints that are there on the ground. And then, but again, it says to us, we need to find a way to really coordinate the deployment of experts. Because fortunately, we had a lot of partners that came on board to support us in this instance, for the challenge was that this whole process was not well coordinated. So we need to find a way of coordinating this so that we can have targeted hands-on support and then can be able to immediately reap positive outcomes out of those interventions. We need to make sure also from there that we need to use the IDP as the only single tool that we have in place that promotes integration. How can we use that tool to make sure that it links to the provincial growth and development plans, that you talk to that, and then also to the national special development perspective, so that we have a collective. And whatever comes from above, from national and local, it finds a way of that horizontal vertical coordination and integration of all the plans that we have in place. Critical are the role of provinces, that you need to make sure that the provinces play the critical role, because the trend is that the delivery happens at the coal face, at the local level. So the tendency is to rush there, but then we have to take stock and say, but how do we really bring the capacity to provinces? We cannot use them because they are there, closer to them, within their provinces, they can provide much of the support as well. We need to really support the provinces too, as a recent process consolidated. From where those lessons, they did help us, the department, to really come up with a concerted, well-directed program which we call the 5-year local government strategic agenda. Building on the recent of the consolidated. As you can see, it has three pillars, if I can call them. The first one was really harnessing and really mainstreaming the hands-on support in order to improve more governance and performance and accountability. And again, to say, how do you address the issues of structure and governance issues in broad? And then the last one, how do you strengthen also the capacity for policy, regulations, and school environment at the local government level? So that was the local government strategic agenda. Now, looking at this, we discovered that even one strategic agenda is about 5 KPAs, different areas of 5 KPAs that needed to be responded to as achieved, and then can measure our programs against those KPAs. We realized that we will not be able to achieve that success unless we really have a what we can call a targeted intervention when it comes to issues of capacity building. So we therefore developed what we call the National Capacity Building Framework. Capacity framework, it was to really outline broader areas that says if you really need to provide support to capacity building for local government, we need to really look at those five broad areas. That's about five broad areas. One, looking at the issue of professionalization that Doug has talked about, the issue of hands-on support, how best do we really implement hands-on support. One, look at how do we coordinate program based on short-term support, because there are many actors that come in. And how do we also, the fourth one, build a lot of capacity for enabling environment for capacity building to happen, just looking at the environment for capacity building. And the last one, how do we really enhance the challenges of coordination? So capacity building framework is mainly a coordinating tool to try and really bring together all these fragmented capacity building initiatives within those broad five areas of parameters, and also to see how best we can, at provincial level, national level, and local level, build institutional arrangements that really assist all partners to really integrate their programs and even harness better the limited limited financial resources. So therefore, it promotes a coordinated approach. But then one thing that it emphasized was to say, before you intervene, you need to really have a proper assessment so that you don't just intervene without having been able to assess what are the real causes of the challenge. But then it began to also bear in mind that there are different assessment tools that the different partners sort of tend to employ. So it promotes the idea of coming up with an integrated assessment tool. We are working on one with PDSA as we speak. Something that will really look at all the broader areas of service for local government. And then also how to make sure that the environment is positive, because what you find that in certain instances, you do come to a program of action and intervention and support, but you find that it may not be sustainable, and also the recipients are not really ready to really absorb it and sustain it. So we need to make sure that whatever we do is very sustainable, because the experience is more for deployment. You deploy experts, once they pull out, 3 months later, it's back to school one. So we need to make sure that the environment is really that and perfect. And critical is what Salka talked to, the issue of quality standardization of the training programs. We need to find a way of really standardizing the quality of different programs so that you don't have programs that really don't add value, but all the programs must be accredited and must be able to add value to the day-to-day operations of a municipality. The NCPRF takes the three-dimensional approach that starts out of the two as well, to say, we have to look at capacity building in a holistic manner. Individual component, look at the community that individuals possess or they must possess to perform better. And then what are the institutional issues, your systems, your processes, are they in place? How to really enhance that? And then the environmental issues, the capacity, it might cover areas that are outside municipality, outside its control. What to make sure that we really support municipalities that may not be financially viable because they cannot really collect much revenue because there's no much economic activity in that area. But also it talks to the legislative issues in terms of the community relations and so forth. How do we make sure that we've got enabling policies in the government to support municipalities and then their capacity? Even though there are many capacity building programs that we tend to employ, but we picked up that mainly there are two grants, if you come to grants, that are there for us to use for capacity building. Mainly it's municipal systems improvement grant, and the other grant is municipal infrastructure grant. Largely, the net is more for infrastructure development, just to make sure that we provide more, extend a range of services to our communities, but it has a component of making sure that at least there is a program management capacity. So that's why we tend to use that for the program management units in municipalities. Whereas the MSIG looks at developing the systems and processes in municipalities. In short, what has happened with the experience of MSIG is that there's been much support in assisting municipalities to really implement the Municipal Property Rights Act, to develop regulation roles and so forth, to set up this capacity, and also to focus on issues of good governance, participation, and the strengthening the world committees, and also to look at the issue of fixed asset registers, which is normally a challenge in municipalities that get qualified audits largely because of some of those issues that we may consider as minor. And then it begins also to touch on the issues of skills, working with on the skills or issues as well. On the net, like I mentioned, the focus for us in this instance is how do we make sure that we've got a fully functional PMU that will really enable municipalities to even deliver on their MIG. Because in most cases, when we're called upon to come and intervene with the regulatory challenge, you find that two things happen. One is that the municipality is underspending on its MIG, its finances, so therefore it's not delivering the infrastructure that may support service delivery. And secondly, you find that because there's no technical capacity. So the PMM, it must serve those expertise. We need to approach program managers, the engineers, financial administrators who can really do make reconciliation and report on it and manage the finances properly. And critical also what we discovered is that sometimes there's no implementation on make and spending because people don't have the capacity just to simply register a project. So at least the grant that we use for the PMU supports us in this instance to address that challenge. This is just an example of the outcome of utilizing MIG to say this is the kind of capacity in the different provinces that you've been able to build. You're using that 0.05% of MIG resources just to support the PMU, just to make sure that you've got the requisite technical expertise that you need. And again, this slide is just a summary just to show the kind of partnerships that we have with the 20 agents out there that are supporting us in the country. It is that supporting us to the amount that is reflected there. Mostly of the support means that it's mostly technical support. What it means, it provides more in kind, more of technical expertise instead of them giving us resources. And then the USA to find that they do give us resources as well, in addition to the technical support as well. And the Italians also support us in the program of decentralization as well for local government. Also on cash, there is support on anti-corruption. the under correction program that we're trying to roll out in municipalities as well. And then also the EU helping us on Mumbai and public participation issues. And what is more interesting as well is that one of the mandates that our government focuses on is the issue of regional integration. So in terms of knowledge sharing and the exchange of knowledge between the regions supporting each other, we've got a program that we've been having with the GRC just to support them in issues of local governance. And sometimes they go further to looking at the entire civil service as well. We do have a different number of departments as we engage because, as you know, different departments run different programs that at the end of the day are really implemented at the local government level. But we have just kept up, noted a few departments that we engage with, largely, firstly, National Treasury. And at the moment, we've got an ongoing engagement, which is driven by our two deputy ministers, to say, both of us in Treasury, we've got a lot of insert to make sure that municipalities are viable, to make sure that the issues of financial management and corruption, to make sure that funds are used for the people they were paid for. And then in that case, we put strong capacity energy to deliver. So we are trying to see how we can come with a joint program in this instance. And we have proposed as well to form what in essence will be a national steering committee on corruption issues, which we call a municipal performance monitoring committee that will help us start to look at what's happening in municipalities so that every 6 months we check what's happening. We will look at any warnings and then we're able, working with the departments, to really come up with the appropriate response. Water replacement with water affairs, because as you know, there's a challenge of water and sanitation, and it's always a challenge for us. So our ministers are also engaging at that level, but we have formed about 6 working groups at working level, which look at issues of operations and maintenance, issues of access service delivery, issues of financial modes and the question of grants, how do we review what we have of based on new finance, skills issues, and also the issues of local government and strategy and quick wins. What issues that came from the municipal turnaround strategies and plans, how can we work together to address those and look at this of monitoring evolution and reporting. Open source maintenance has become a critical challenge for us because once over time we have really focused, rightfully so, on really extending provision of services by this infrastructure. But we've learned in hindsight that we need to make sure that the infrastructure and resources that they've really put on the ground are really maintained and we sustain them, because otherwise if we don't do that, we can do something with quality, can be really performing now, but 5 years later it's back to square one. So that's the challenge we have on the ONM. TPSA, our partners, they've made a presentation as well on saying the money that's supporting the issues of hands-on support. I won't really say much to that, but what we consider significant is their young professional program, because it is designed to make sure that the success sustainability, because experts are deployed in municipalities, after some time they exit. So now the aim of this program of these young professionals is that you need to take young professionals from around the municipalities, people are going to be mentored, who are going to stay behind and they sustain the provision of services moving forward. We are in negotiations with the TPSAs in Romania around the support on the LTTs, on how now we can really work together to really analyze all the municipal turnaround strategic plans that are there from all municipalities in the country and how we can come to the form of action so that we can quickly come up with a response and really come up with the targeted programs to really address the challenges that have been addressed or rather identified through the MTAS report. And then we'll soon have a workshop and engage as to how we can, together with the BSA, form the rapid response team that jointly have also in all provinces. Whenever there's a challenge, there's a quick response team that goes before things get worse and we are faced with all the challenges and all the uprisings as well, and before the systems collapse. So that's what we're trying to do. And then there's the process of reviewing things on Manja that's been there for 3.5 years to see what are the lessons learned, how can we really align it to the emission projects that come from the turnaround strategy as well. I indicated earlier the three-dimensional nature of capacity building, the issue of individual capacity. One area that we first need to do was to really look at the skills audit. There's a program that is deliberately looking at the audit of skills. What level of skills are there in municipalities, especially at management level, and what are the gaps, and how therefore do we close those gaps, and also come out with community profiles to say, what type of community is doing it for an MM, for a CFO, and all of those. So this program is helping us in that instance. I think that the certification measures has been completed, and then the draft community profile in place, and additionally, it's been compiled that really begins to define all this is what they mean by community, what they mean by capacity, what they mean by all of this. And the draft framework is also in place in this instance. We have a local government, a Lokola there, which has a municipal leadership development program. This is more of an in-house institution that is just to look at how best it can support us, for instance, municipalities, start to build capacity in municipalities and come up and design programs that are accredited, that are well standardized, and the partnership has been formed with the LPC and Financial Academy in this instance. But the municipalities and development programs looks at the leadership in municipalities, your councillors, and the managers. Focus has been in those four program areas that are indicated in the presentation. And we are in the process of really looking at how best we can really work with Palama in this instance, and how best we can maybe look at the possibility of coming with a public school for local government, but that's not the case that Palama is doing, so this is what is in the pipeline as far as the leadership academy is concerned. Even though we've come up with a number of programs, we still acknowledge that some programs remain endemic, some constraints. There's still an ongoing fragmentation of initiatives because different people run different things in all municipalities. It is still there. But the other main challenge is that of the vacancy rate, especially at management level, because we need to build capacity. And also, even if you deploy an expert, you expect that expert to really transfer skills, but sometimes it's not to transfer skills too because of the vacancy rates and the skills gap there. So this is still a challenge as well. So there's a challenge of lacking these critical skills. So we need to find a way of really of addressing this concern. Just to get a picture of the level of March of this year, we stand at 87% in terms of municipal managers that are there in their post. So percentage-wise, we stand at 13%. This is the MMs. And then when it comes to 56 managers, those report to the MMs, we're standing at 86% of posts that are being filled. So this is the difference of 14% that we still need to try and address. But as a department, the question always comes, what are you doing to address this? We engage with municipalities, but luckily we find a way that we need to engage with provinces and really try to really help provinces to advise them to try and develop a database to try and monitor what is happening at municipalities at all times so that every month they'll be able to know who has resigned, who has been dismissed, or who is under disciplinary action, where are the gaps, what are the challenges. So that also they must be able to, every municipality, to really say, you can't have a post vacant for a longer period. There must be a minimum period. So we are working with them to try and see how we can address this thing. And as far as our retreat also, we are looking at maybe come up with legislation as well that will look at the issue of how can we arrest or minimize challenges that are imposed by political interference or maybe unfair dismissals and so forth in municipalities that therefore create a
system. Yeah, sorry. I'm not sure. I just want to remind that time-wise, we really have 5 minutes now.
OK. Now come to the last part of the presentation, because all of this, we talk about lessons, what you've done over time. Now we've come to the challenge to say, how do we move forward now, given the experience up to 2009? As you know, Chair, that we embarked on a comprehensive assessment of the state of local government. Our two official report came out, which really spelled out in summary that yes, the local government system is working, but it is in distress. That there are different number of failures, some that are because of internal issues within the policy, some that are external issues. So we needed to try to see how we can address that. So the root causes, I explained, some of them are systematic issues, some relate to political factors, some of which I have alluded to in my presentation, community gaps and the lack of sufficient oversight. We as a department, therefore, based on that assessment report, we have come up with what we call a local government turnaround strategy that I've been talking about. The aim is just to restore confidence in the local government system. As you can tell, at the moment now, they seem not to be confident, and then we need to try and also use a different approach, what we call a differences approach, to addressing the challenges of municipalities, because we've come to realize over time that a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work, because municipalities face different challenges. Some are common, but they find themselves in different circumstances. So we have a local government 10-point plan that, therefore, is beginning to guide us moving forward to say, not to make sure that we have a acceptable quantity and quality of municipal services provided, that we attend to the issues of local economic development, which over time, given that the agenda has been a major challenge, creating viable communities and making sure that we support the creation of jobs. Make sure that you've got reliable and credible IDPs, refined home committees and so forth, but which is more critical here is the creation of a single window of coordination, which comes to the point that we are alluding to, that we still have a problem of fragmented intervention. We need to try and see how best we can integrate interventions in local government as expected through our national cooperative framework. We've done an alignment through the delivered agreement of the issues that we hope we need to address. I'm not going to go into details on them. One, using a different approach to planning, financing, at municipalities and service delivery. And then the other one, how do we increase the access to basic services? The other one, how to come up and enhance our community web program so to support LED and get everybody on board. Creation of civil coordination, which is at the heart, improving capacity for municipal finance and administration, that is through broader governance issues, providing support to public participation by enhancing the work committees and looking at work committee models of financing that we can use. But critical to this is to see how best we can then support some of the priorities that are there under the human settlement program, since issues of sanitation and water are linked to us as well. I won't touch on this because I've explained this as well. So, but another critical program that we have of addressing the challenge of service delivery, we are trying to see in terms of coordination, how can we create, or how can we make sure that municipalities come 2014, they achieve clean audit. It means there are sound financial management systems in place. So you've got operation clean audit that is there to make sure that it's effective governance arrangement, enhance the issues of leadership and critical oversight on finances, and then that you've got a conducive financial management environment. And then that again, going forward, for us as a department of corporate governance, what we're looking for now is how do we make sure that we give on our money to corporate governance by really putting more emphasis and having a structured approach to the means of coordination moving forward, using a differentiated approach to cover the building, and also pulling all our government departments together and creating the systems and processes that can allow us to coordinate vertically and horizontally such that everybody involved in local government is involved to support the same agenda as for the priorities of local government general strategy. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think we're not doing very badly as far as time is concerned. It's 10 past. We would have really loved to have much, much more time for members to engage in this. But at this stage, I would like to introduce our councillor here, Honorable Somio, who is an NEC member and responsible for for the working group of capacity building. Thank you. Honourable members, you are in your hands. You want to start it? Okay. Chairperson wants to
start. Chairperson, thank you very much. I want to appreciate the insightful presentations that we have received. And all presentations are very useful in some of the issues that they highlight, which arises from the work that they are doing. So in that sense, I think that's been very useful. And when you listen to them together, it makes a huge difference than if you're listening to one at different times and so on. So it's been very useful at that sense. Capacity is the problem that we are dealing with, and what is missing for me is I don't hear sufficiently emphasized the fact that capacity is political. In other words, that for these things we are talking about to really be effective at a municipal level, you need an environment that is conducive, for example, most rural areas, that inside the municipality, the environment must be such that people want to work there. And they feel encouraged to work there in that environment. And so that can only happen if we have a correct political environment. Now, in all of your capacity building political initiatives, there's no reference to this matter as a key problem then. When there is no political coherence, when there's political conflict, then none of these things have a light of day that they are not going to end. Now, let's remind you that government and parliament are political institutions. There's no way you can seek to depoliticize those institutions. That they essentially operate on the basis of a political mandate in a multi-party system. So if in your capacity building initiative, you do not even recognize that, in fact, that's where part of the problem is, then your initiatives are likely not to have the optimal effect that they can have. So the challenge to you, and incidentally, if you're reading capacity building initiatives, at least we are members of the United Nations Development Program, they're doing very interesting work, sharing their expertise around the world around capacity building initiatives. And one of the things they have woken up to after a long time is how political capacity building is. There is what we call, in the observations of the Auditor General, they have not presented. They have not presented, no, but they have presented in the past. They observed that some of the, you know, people comply. They produce information, rather the reporting requirements on time and stuff like that and so on. But when you look at the substance of the reportage, this is really malicious compliance. It doesn't produce the kind of stuff that is required there, but that it is expected that by June you must have reported this, by this time you must have done that and so on. And part of it is the problem at the political level in the appreciation of the need for working together in the way in which we are talking about. So in its absence, it creates a problem. And I also want to locate the human resource development strategy. The capacity building initiatives you're talking about, this is my second point, is part of a national human resource development strategy. When the Minister of Higher Education presented his overall plan, there was a little line there that spoke about he will be interacting with local government to hear about their needs. Now, in what you've been saying, I haven't yet you located in that area of work. That as part of the National Human Resource Development Strategy, you will be working together with them to address the problem identified there that universities, there's nothing in their curriculum about PFMA, treasury, about PFMA or MFMA. Even 6 years after, at least MFMA. Is that an accident? No. The chairperson of the Australian Association of Municipalities one day, many years ago, I don't think he's still there, said, you see, capacity building must be done by its practitioners. You see, it's one thing to look at the rose in a picture. It's beautiful. But to handle it, you are likely to be stuck by the thorn. But you also appreciate the delicate gentleness of its petals. They are beautiful. The aroma is magnificent. People who are going to be training local governments from academic institutions, their weakness is that they do not have that cold stuff that the local government politics. So this is why we can't see the result of capacity building that they do when they've done it. Okay. So how do you address that gap in a way that is going to speak to those issues? I'm sorry, just for... There are two other points that I want to make. Is that COPTA's presentation, there mentions about three things as challenges of capacity. It proceeds in the next page. But what I really want to ask you, are you doing justice to all the issues you've raised in your previous chapter? And then you end identifying three things as the key challenges. I don't think you are representing the entirety of your presentation. And this is part of the problem. You see, the state said 850 billion bucks is going into infrastructure. Okay? And some of it includes hugely municipal infrastructure grants. Now, in some of the reports that we receive, that no, this has been done. But when we look at the quality of that infrastructure that was provided, we are going to have to start afresh, literally. So there's a challenge that not only in maintenance, but in the actual procurement processes that lead to the doing of that infrastructure, we are sure that people who are doing that are going to produce quality infrastructure that will not require us to come back and do it again, whereas it would have been reported as having been done and so on. So I would like to hear more from all of the speakers who have spoken how that particular issue is addressed, and it cannot be addressed unless there is effective collaboration and so on. This stuff about training, the duration and the quality of training. If they're going to give someone 3 days training, 4 days training, quite frankly, let me put it positively, the quality in, quality out. Okay? That's what they say. Another way of putting it, garbage in, garbage out. So in a sense, they say, we must look at the sort of training programs that have been done. Is their duration decent? Does it really speak to the effectiveness of that intervention that they should do? So it would be huge thank you very much, Nathan. What my challenge to the people who have spoken here today, with the leadership, obviously the department is a key input, but the single window of coordination must mean the bringing together of innovative insights from different role players and not an imposition of one line. Now, I want to be crude about that. Because the experiences of the different institutions will be different. So the manner in which we conduct those multi-stakeholder discussion of capacity must be creative. I worry about standardization, about what it really means. I hope it doesn't mean, I hope it will promote innovative ways of handling things and not a uniform, platform that actually universalizes mediocrity, but instead recognizes the value of working together, building creative solutions to problems and so on. So that approach to coordination and working together and institutional collaboration must be characterized by that kind of thing. In other words, we respect the institutional integrity of each of those role players and the insights that they generate here. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I recognize Honorable Singh, Honorable Swart, Honorable Harold Blom, Honorable Mashifu.
Sorry, Chairperson, I just forgot one thing.
And Honorable Ramasaga.
Yeah, I noticed that Cocter presents the most artistic presentation of all of us. And they've never done that when they present to us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start where Comrade Sanoli finished, not on the artistic part, but also reflect on the last slide that Cocktail gave us today, which focused on the single coordination, the slide number 31, before they said thank you for the second time. Single window of coordination. Chairperson, for me here today, as a member of Appropriations Committee, I mean, we've heard five different departments or agencies present. They've more or less said the same thing. They've all recognized the challenges. But it's like a case of water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. Because the results that we as politicians see on the ground are not something that we find that was given to us academically here today. There are improvements in local government. And I want to agree with the slide presented again by Cocta, slide 24. Overall, the system of local government is working, but it is in distress. And that is the distress that we have to answer. Now, there can be many examples that I can give, but what I would like to suggest, Chairperson, is that all these learned gentlemen and ladies that are here today must get together on their own and brainstorm this thing and see how the single coordination can be put together so that at the end of the day, the whole question of capacity building, effective capacity building and delivery can become a reality. For us in this committee, Chair, we are given figures all the time. We looked the other day at conditional grants. We looked at DORA. We looked at all sorts of 3% spending, 8% spending, 10% spending. Tenders not put out correctly. We heard the other day in the case of Mpumalanga, the hospital, revitalization money withdrawn. I mean, what is it? I agree with Comrade Sanoli that yes, to an extent, it is political interference, political influences, because the politicians have a hand in who gets appointed. But I was in Mpumalanga a few weeks ago with the Standing Committee on the Auditor General. We visited three municipalities. All three did not have municipal managers. They were under disciplinary proceedings. Some were fired. Two of them did not have CFOs. And what is happening? So whilst we say here that only 13% don't have municipal managers, if we go deeper, we'll find that many of those municipal managers who are appointed are not at their workstations. The mayors, they were complaining to us that their staff go on capacity building programs, and it's appropriate that I say it here. And they say they don't know why. What do they go and learn? They can't put out a simple tender. They can't follow a simple contract. A CFO needs a consultant to assist him. They have engineers appointed, but the engineer's got a consultant who consults to him. There are people that are employed, but you know they have, for each person employed, you have, or for each 10, you have a consultant to consult them. And I think forever and ever, until we say amen, there's going to be a role for consultants in this country. Because we are allowing that role, we're creating that role for them. There are so many gaps that there is this role. So, Chairperson, I don't know if, you know, one can say any more and go specific. But, you know, it's so necessary for all of you to come together and come up with a single program. I mean, the programs are fantastic. National Treasury, DBSA, Sienza Manje, Salga. But where is it taking us? You know, they say that sometimes we in South Africa, unlike the Americans, you know, if there is a problem, we identify the problem, then before we find a solution, we'll have a workshop, and then we'll have another workshop, and another workshop, and by the time you really come up with a solution, the target has moved. Unlike the Americans, if they identify a target, they will fire, then they'll aim. And if they miss, well, bad luck. Well, they missed very badly in Iraq. Right? We don't want to do that. But I think, you know, we've really got to get to the target. Once the target is there, attack the target and see how we can come together. Because I think what is happening at the local level for us, as people who go around, you know, in the constituencies, leaves a lot to be desired in terms of, you know, what is happening at local government. And local government is a cornerstone of democracy. You know, we're all saying sometimes we don't even need provinces, we don't need districts. So you know, it's an appeal, Chair, that I'm making. That's the thing. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I'm afraid I'm going to say a lot of the same things again, but, you know, we had four institutions presenting today, and the presentations were good. But I'm just worried that there might be duplication. You know, they're sitting on a lot of, each one of them is sitting on a lot of money, which they're spending, and a lot of staff, and I'm just concerned that there might be duplication in what they're presenting and what they're doing in capacity building. And then I agree with the chair of COCTA that, you know, we should have more coordination. But what are we finding, you know, at the level of local government? We're finding, you know, qualified audit reports. We're finding a lack of internal audit units, the recognition. For instance, we had one the other day where the chairperson of the audit committee in a municipality found wasteful expenditure and was then fired by the mayor because he didn't like the result of what was presented to him. And then, you know, we hear about these maintenance backlogs of 122 billion. We hear about payment of services into trust accounts, the lack of control over infrastructure grants that is being used for overdraft, payment of overdrafts, and that it's not being used for the purpose for which we, you know, which government intended it to go to. We have poor financial controls and data controls. We have a legal framework where councillors are not allowed to interfere in the administration of the municipality because the municipal manager can then lay it, you know, a charge against them and say, you're not allowed to do this, so you can't interfere in it. Yes, it's in the law. And this is why municipal managers have become a law unto themselves. They do exactly as they wish. They don't have to listen to the councillors. They don't have to listen to the politicians, you know, to who's been elected by the people. They can do as they wish. And there, that is why we find more corruption and we find more service delivery protests. And, you know, the whole scheme and the whole problem lies around the lack of capacity in local government. And therefore it's necessary for us to have capacity building and have the right skills and staff in the right positions, in the correct positions. And then SAGA comes and they, in their proposals, and I read to you, they say, actively discourage political influence interference in the appointment of staff resulting in politically accepted appointments at the expense of the necessary and relevant skills required. And that is where our biggest problem lies, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, thanks. I also would like to say it was good to hear this morning the inputs made here. My question is, if you look, and I know I was very strong in that in the legislature, not strong on that, but on the point that I made, and that was the training of the financial, of the finance officials. Now, since 2004 up to now, let me be honest, we were not very successful in the Treasury Department. I don't know if the problem is, we must identify where were the problems with the training of officials in the finance department. The other thing is, what is the monitoring process? Are we monitoring the officials that we trained in the finance? Because if you go back to local government, it is about practical things. And I think most of the courses that were presented to the people, especially to the rural areas, it is too theoretical, and I think we must look at this also. And then the other thing, Chair, which our experience in the last 4 years where is that when you go to municipality, there is always people going on to courses. There are too many courses, too many, let I tell you, I think, talk shops. And my question is, what monitoring mechanisms are there? Feedback, questionnaires, are these courses effective? And then I doubt, because many of these people tell they are going out for a nice 3-day job, finish and blah. Let me be quite honest on that. And then, Chair, I think that the turnaround policy of the department is a brilliant move also to make certain that over the next 3 or 4 years we will get the results. And we must, that is the bull by the horns, we have to take the bull by the horns. It's not the easy thing. But I think what I see here this morning, I think we can make progress. But Chair, I think there's also a tremendous responsibility on SALGA. They have a training division. They have a training arm. But Chair, when counselors go to these training courses, the training courses at the end of the day must be attended by all the counselors, not by the half, and the other half never attended. I think there is a tremendous responsibility also on SALGA to make certain that the quality of counselors that's lifted. Because, let me be honest, the quality of our counselors is not up to standard. And you cannot monitor your officials if your counselors are not. And on the other hand, the officials also must not attend only talk shops and talk shops and talk shops. They must come back and they must blow back. And then my last question, Chair. Why must we pay for people in the rural areas for consultants and contractors? You know, we was at a place last week, 2 weeks ago in Eastern Cape, where the solar systems are not working. There was a guy who was standing there, and I'm convinced with the 1 or 2 day training course, we can employ this guy at much cheaper rates as the people who came from 300, 200 kilos from that place to repair this thing. We must make use of our people in the rural areas who are technical, perhaps not attend the technical school, they haven't got the opportunity. But there are many practical people in the municipalities which we can use to do this job with a plain bit, with a small little bit of technical skills that we can carry out. So my plea to this morning is, especially in the rural area, because I come from the rural area, and I know that with 25% of the cost you paid for consultants, there are persons who can look at the electricity, you can look at the solar systems, you can look at the water at the clinics. So don't use people to pay in $4,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 and at the end of the day, it is money that I think is thrown away. My request this morning, Chair, is that I think we must look at how we can bring in the people in the rural area. We have some practical things. Because at the end of the day, it's all about practical things. Not the theory. The people in the platteland, and I think it is Gibran that said that it's about practical things. Streets, water, sanitation, and good finances. That's what it's all about. Why must we have long theoretical things and make it not easy for the people in the rural areas to come. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Somehow these presentations were overlapping to an extent, and by the look of things, there is so much financial resources poured into local government. To what extent, then, have these resources showed value for money? How can you account for value for money, starting from Treasury, DBSA, and all of you, because there is so much financial resources that have been poured in? SALGA, I think this is the second time SALGA is talking about rural municipalities, particularly around the issue of IT. Have they been capacitated, or is there a possibility, a remote possibility of having them capacitated? Because the presenter actually said There are some rural municipalities where really nothing can really be done. In this day and age, I think I concur with the Honourable Member who said we need a political will to be able to do that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just maybe just ask the DBSA, on the slide 7, there is analysis of the backlog, and they talk about 27 electricity, sanitation, and 8%. Is this quite accurate backlog that you're talking about here? Are you talking guesstimate backlog? And I just also want to ask the question, in the vacancy rate, it stands at 33%. On another presentation, it stands at 14%. It seems to me that on the same issue, there's a methodology, I don't know, the analysis of this backlog is not quite the same. The figure that comes out is not the same. Then I just want to ask this question. I think Falga, in the presentation, makes the point about qualification, professionalism, manager, CFOs. And he says that if they do have a qualification, there's a problem there. Now, I'm wondering, as I'm sitting here, that aren't we having a one standard uniform approach in terms of employment, for an example of CFOs in the country, that will say that if you were to employ a CFO, you would employ, these are the criteria, and these are the people that you need to employ. Now, why would we find later that indeed that there is quite not compliance with the same standard that has been set? Because everybody that is a CFO talks about money and accounting. There is a certain degree that is normally specified. So what is the problem? And maybe I can understand around the issue of deployment of managers, because there have maybe a lot of political work that goes into who should become the manager, the municipal manager. But in terms of the skill side, I'm just worried that I don't understand the reason. Now, if you're talking about Clean Audit Program 2014, and in one of the slides you spoke about 54% that is poor quality of audit, and you have on your CFO this problem that you are talking about, and you say you have 80% of these managers of the post field, what are you really talking about? Is that what is filled in, what is the problem, still the same, or are you talking relative in terms of 2040 or 2080% compliance in terms of the 80%? In other words, is the problem of this particular field accurately being comprehended in terms of what is it and that what is it that you need to do? I'm trying to ask that question. And then, Chair, the issue about the capacity building, again, in terms of the program, is a targeted solution accurate in terms of the solution you want to bring in terms of achieving maximum results, in terms of capacity building, in order to achieve the program that you're putting forward? And I think I struggle to find that is probably accurate. Because if you were to want to resolve the issue of audit, your capacity building, even those that are an incumbent, will be a particular model in terms of addressing the problem in order to achieve results. So, and the IDP, in terms of the solution, I just want to get this response. The question in terms of it, is it in terms of service delivery? Is it been signed off? And signed off meaning it meets the necessary requirement in terms of what the facet of IDP should be. Are you happy with it? Are you happy what you have in terms of those IDP given the program? And this reminds me the list that we asked you the last time you appeared before the committee. We did ask you this list of these municipalities that were lots of problems in relation to this. Because I think we need to compare the problem that you see erupting and the actual institution, whether the institution itself is able to respond to the challenges based on what you have presented as a kind of problem statement. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mabunda, Honorable
Chairperson, with me is just that if it will be a question, it will be one. But what I just want to check is, say, okay, thank you, Chair. Let me generalize this to say, can we be privileged today from all those institutions or components of the government that they have presented today here, including COGTA as a department, if ever there is one integrated capacity building program that will be cutting across? Because seemingly when we listen, each and every institution or the components here has got a capacity building program at its own with its funds. I wouldn't like even to pose a question to say, does those training programs, do you find good results out of that? Because the target is one. Can we be privileged? Or maybe the saying by COGTA to say there should be one single window of coordination maybe include the program that is being said by those other components. I just want to check if ever we do have, because I think all of us who are aiming at one target, capacity building on the local municipalities. Chairperson, thank you.
Honorable Sir.
Thanks, Chair. I think we've given them enough questions to have a whole seminar. But, Chairperson, what I would like to find out is that the allocation for the FMG last year, that was 43-odd million rand underspent, and this financial year, it's increased by extra 60-odd million. So looking at an additional 107 million, if you couldn't spend your whole grant last year, I don't know how with the increase this year you're planning on spending it. And then Treasury is stating that the various municipalities are not wanting to comply with their request for information so that they can transfer those grants. If Treasury is unable to do that, then what authority or power has the department got to ensure that municipalities that aren't complying do comply? And then the observation around capacity. I want to know, that observation, has that capacity or lack of capacity been benchmarked to say, if that capacity is full, what kind of performance we should get out of municipalities? And the training that's taking place at the moment now, is that being weighed up against that lack of capacity or that benchmark? So when people are going through the system or being trained, what actual impact is that having on service delivery? Because without things, without indicators like that, we can send people for training for infinity. But what are you monitoring it against? You know? And next year, half the people that have been sent to get training might be gone again. so. And has there been an analysis to say if a certain number of people are recalled, what impact will that have on service delivery as well? Because those are kind of political indicators that we need to make political decisions as well. So I would like to find out if anything like that has been done.
You know, this question of political decision, the more you hammer on it, it scares me. I was just whispering something to to the chairperson. Honorable Mashiro.
Thank you, Chairperson. National Treasury gave us a list of the training programs and at the same time stated that training initiatives, some of the training initiatives are done through consultants. And immediately thereafter said they had 600 people working on skilling and supporting some of the municipalities. So I just want to know where these consultants come in, who pay for them, because they have 600 people coming in. Who initiated the training of the introduction of these consultants and at what cost? And DBSA spoke about their program on water, which they specifically mentioned Northwest. And Northwest seemed to be the area where there's a lot of water problems, even in some of the municipalities where people go a long way without water, like the Madimbe municipality. When did your program that and what effect does it have in assisting those people? And we'll be very happy to know about your deployees, first 50 deployees. Where are they deployed? In which municipalities? Because maybe they are in my own municipality, which is very small, and I don't know. A one-to-one chat might be very interesting if they are in our own municipalities. And Saragan mentioned 75% of funding of grants from EU, 25% from Swedish International Development Agency. Unfortunately, these were percentages. If we knew how much they were and we could see the impact of it, we could do follow-up questions, because SALGA is an institution that actually should be having the interest of their own colleagues being trained. And with such a lot of money, we'd like to know how they train their, how much this money is, and how many people were, what impact it had in the training of the counselors. Just like when you said, in 2006, we trained 7,000 counselors. Were they new counselors or the only new counselors in that during that period? And when we talk about training ward committees, are they a number of what? I don't know how many they were. Or is it the number of ward committee members that we trained? Because we have to attach cost to all those things. And it became very interesting because COCTA spoke about assistance from development partners. And this assistance, when looking at it, I actually concentrated on the one that mentioned cash. It was slide 16. The other one was in kind. So the one that mentioned cash really drew my attention, because a lot of money was spent on other expenses, especially the Danish one. They didn't have nothing spent, it's a zero, but on other expenses, there was some expense of about 12, which really makes us ask, what are these other expenses that are so much in these training programs from these development partners? And what I would like to know from COCTA again is that it's my very last one. Performance agreement of municipal managers. 51 were not signed, and not
counting the 31 municipalities with municipal managers. So I'd just like to know if with those municipal performance managers agreements that are not signed, what is the state of their bonus? Because performance agreement, I think, is linked to payment of bonuses. Do they get bonus with those unsigned agreements, or what's happening? Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm not supposed to do that. It's not a bargaining I just want to make two observations. The first one is that about vacancies and so on. COPTA will have heard me say this in our meeting last week, that Treasury, in their two-yearly review of local government, observed that employment was declining in municipalities. In speaking to some of the municipalities around the country, in some instances, there are people who are employed in strategic positions with technical capacity. They don't have a PA, they don't have staff to report to them. Technicians, ordinary, simply, as Johan was saying earlier on, the people with basic skills and so on. So, effectively, it means that that job can't be done well. Some of the water management problems relate to ducts not being cleaned, you know, like not cleaning your gutter. And so the impact is a ripple effect across the entire system. So the overemphasis on the strategic positioning in municipalities conceals this reality. In your 10-point plan, you speak about employment creation through local economic development. I think you should say including through local economic development in your employment practices. Instead of reversing, you should be employing people at that basic level. That makes it different to service delivery. Those senior people that we're talking about need staff to work with and so on. In their absence, they can't themselves go and do the work themselves. So it defeats the purpose and so on. I just wanted to, last observation. In the ICT, Salga was talking about it, about partnership. There's no mention of the State Information Technology Agency. Now, it might be having problems, but I thought that if there is a partner, you must have, that's the principal partner as a state institution. What are they in existence for if, as an association of municipalities, none of us wants to have anything to deal with it? We all prefer the private sector. What's the answer to that, Chairperson? I'm just asking a question.
Mr. Fanchas, FFC, before I give the response, would you like to make some observations from your own experience working with municipalities?
You're painting. We have a problem here. You know, I allowed you to go on and on. It's not just about time. The fact that this room is booked, you know.
Chair, what I can perhaps say from the FSC's point of view, we have recently established a local government unit. We have made a comment on the turnaround strategy, but perhaps I'll just go quickly over some of the recommendations that the Commission made for the 2010-11, in other words, last year's recommendations. And they essentially concur quite strongly with what the committee is coming out with, that there's about the lack of coordination between the various capacity building programs and the need to design those programs in such a way that you can monitor the impact at regular intervals, for example, every 5 years or so. We pointed out here that capacity building programs should be informed by the local government performance management system and their key performance indicators, comprehensive assessment and design process, differentiated between urban and rural municipalities, focus on the organizational, fiscal and institutional constraints, an intergovernmental-wide framework for understanding what constitutes a lack of capacity. In other words, what specific skills and what specific institutional interventions. There's a question of poorly defined roles and responsibilities between national, provincial and district municipalities. And each capacity building program should have a clear outline of measurable objectives, targets and timelines. And one should think of continuing programs rather than stopping and starting them at several, as one has seen over the past. And the Commission further recommends that appropriations for CMs and mines should be allocated through the Division of Revenue process. And I think that's basically what we did on local government capacity building last year. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much. Maybe I should, before I, we chat the way forward, give Mr. Comrade Somia opportunity to comment on some of the questions you have.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. My apologies as well. In appreciation of the questions, which for me are indicative of a direction for us to take. For example, we are already making recommendations. The fact that we have to present a form of a coordinated effort to capacity building, which is mainly acceptable, you see, in various levels. The second area which is coming up in terms of questions at the same time, with a suggestion. It's on a political nature of governance at the local level, which we fairly agree. As SAGA, we made a presentation which sought to indicate specifically on the constitutional imperatives of establishing local government, where you would have to make a consideration of your political components, your councillors being capacitated, your officials being capacitated. At the same time, you must look into the environment which shelters local government as an institution, your communities through your ward committees and other stakeholders which have to participate in terms of ensuring that services are somewhat sustained at the local level. But the overemphasis on the question, which begins to portray some sense of instability, which is presented through that political nature in a way, goes back to ourselves, to yourself, basically to how can we make the system to work better, having to absorb the political environment. You said that, for example, the former president, President Mbeki, makes this kind of a judgment in his address in 2006, that local government faces a challenge about 68% of its own political functionaries are new. You see, that then presents a sense of saying, over time, we're going to have that kind of scenario, you see. And here we are presenting a situation which as well begins to portray a nature of age analysis of managers who occupy key critical positions at local government level. Some of them would have been presented on the filling of vacancies, but vacancies which are filled are so much, and those vacancies were identified in a particular time, meaning therefore the age of those who occupy such positions poses a challenge for us to be able to present a formidable institutional capacity for us to be able to deliver. That needs some kind of attention for us to do so. The third element, which I think it comes as a, in a form of a question. Is that a capacity building, capacity building? And probably we must as well ask this question. Why are we asking that question now? It's because of a challenge, because of a problem. It might be because of those who occupy such positions. They demand an attendance to that kind of an attack. That provide that capacity. But if we had a focus on the correct positioning, correct appointment, qualifying individuals, wouldn't probably cutting this much in terms of capacity provision. You look into the outcomes which are presented in that nature. Someone is asking, why is it that impossible for someone who has been employed in a CFO to present to council a dashboard report at the required time, to present to council a quarterly report at the required time, to present to council an annual financial at the appropriate time? And such a question is fair, you see, but it then goes back to say, some of those who are there are not necessarily in a highest position in terms of their own qualification. Well, take a municipality in a rural setting. Take Nguba, that's for an athlete. It's very difficult there to attract competent personnel to occupy such positions, such that you would have such a person to be put in a range of receiving consistent capacity, because you'll appoint accountants rather than appoint people who are in the range of getting to the CAs and so forth in as far as the CFOs are concerned. And that is a critical challenge that we're facing. That's why the intervention through what is termed the single public service and so forth somewhat is viewed as an opportunity for us to equalize the setting for the benefit of the sector and overall the state in as far as the public sector is concerned. So then the questions you ask are as well posing to us some kind of a scenario which says, how can we, as a state in general, can we minimize our attendance to this? That's why, together with COCTA, now we are in a model which is going to present what is called a dictionary of occupation at the local level. So we define qualifications at every level, that you'd know. For CFO, these are qualifications for an engineer, you see who's going to be heading that kind of a division. This is a qualification. We somewhat assist those who are pressured by political operatives to say, even if you want me to appoint this one, but this is what we need in terms of this position. So we're getting into that kind of a scenario, which for us is going to be somewhat assisting. But I want to appreciate the questions in a sense of presenting some form of a window to us, both ourselves, SALGA, and our partners, COCTA, and whoever we are collaborating with, in terms of attending to issues of capacity. You asked the chair the specific question on CITA, seen as far as IT is concerned. There is a workshop which is taking place on the 18th of the day today, tomorrow, on matters of ICT, some kind of a collaboration in terms of IGR, the state in general, in as far as those matters are concerned. So we are getting into that level so that we can be able to see how can we work together. But I agree with you that we underutilize that opening generally in local government, which is basically an overall challenge for us.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, comrades. The chairperson is apologizing. He has got another commitment. Chair, you are allowed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I have to go and report to the management.
Okay. Colleague, I think we're faced with a challenge now. I mean, I indicated this room is going to be used.
the best thing that we could do is to give 1 minute. 1 minute, literally 1 minute for each one of you. Just to summarize, not to go into details of what, all the questions. Which means that, in fact, it wouldn't have been easy because some questions were really asking for details of certain, of certain things, which it would have been difficult, of course, to assess how many people, how much of that, those kind of things. The request that one would really like to make is that you take that 1 minute, just summarize as your last word what you think that has to be done. I agree with Comrade Somio that some of the, the way forward has already been charted. But after which then I'll summarize. Can I start with National Treasury there?
Thank you, Chairperson, and members. I think we will take most of the issues into our work program. That's the first comment. The few other issues that probably would need to have done is to improve on the monitoring and evaluation of various of the programs, and that is something we're working towards. There is, however, a serious challenge, because when you start to ask for more reports from municipality, then same honourable members say the reporting requirements become too onerous. So I'd like us to balance some of the requests that we're making to that. Perhaps we can deal with that in a much better way. We are also wanting to improve on measuring the kind of benefits that's accruing to these programs. It's of concern to us, as it was like of you, that the certain issues that were raised are key that we do address them. There's some tools that are available in the legal framework, which is in the Division of Revenue Act, which is largely the withholding of grants tool that's available to us. Besides that, there's very limited other tools that are available in the legal framework for us as a national to be able to manage more effectively a grant. Thank you, Chair. I think that covers us. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
Thanks. Just 3 points, Chair. Thank you. One, I think starting with the chairperson that has left, there were a number of gaps that were pointed out, and I think we will attend to them. Two, there were one or two members that requested information. You even reminded us of previous meetings where we owed you some things. We will provide that to you, number two. Number three, Chairperson, our presentation ends off, which we still would argue is the most important point, which is giving effect to the single window coordination and how we better coordinate our work. We have a number of ideas in terms of how to do that, and I think, Chairperson, we will provide you a progress report on how we do that. One of the tasks, this is my last point, one of the things we're going to do, which we have, by the way, is to set up a structure or reactivate the structure of everyone sitting in this room to work very closely together. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much to all of you. I think that the point that really came out very strongly was the issue of coordination, that each one is doing something in his or her little corner, and the objective of calling this meeting was to say this must come to an end. I mean, we want people, there's no need to compete about these things, but it's to bring these resources, to mobilize these resources together. For instance, National Treasury, in terms of your Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, it has remained 200 rand for years. I mean, it's cost. It's 200 rand for years. I mean, 200 million rand for years. The reason for it, for not growing, is because the uptake is low. So you can't, pour money which is not going to be, utilized.
you go to whether it's your NSIG, your at least with municipal infrastructure grants. I think we have improved because there's a grant for cities, there's a grant for small municipalities. But you know, National Treasurer, there's something that is not acceptable, that will not, what you call, agree you, with you as this committee. It's to say that the tool that you say you have it, that of withholding. So, to us, withholding is not going to, the reason for disagreeing with that is because I'm an official sitting there, municipal manager. If you withhold, I'll still earn my money and earn a bonus. In fact, for withholding at the end of the day. But these resources are meant to address a particular, what you call, a reason. In terms of the communities. Now, we're depriving the communities. We're not necessarily depriving the people that we're withholding funds. They really have nothing to lose at the end of the day. But it's the communities that lose out on the whole thing. So, in terms of the Constitution, your Section 154, your Section 34, Section 34 of the Municipal Finance Management Act is saying that capacity building, the national and provincial government must by agreement assist municipalities in building the capacity of municipalities. So it is not just by choice, or do you want to help the municipalities or what. It is legislated that it's a requirement that we really need to do it. In terms of the, for instance, I met last week we were in East London. We met some, the mayors were meeting there. We didn't see, I saw the other mayors. I mean, they were talking about these onerous ways of reporting, that they get this, all these municipal infrastructure grants, they have to report to this department, and that department, and that department, and that department. We think that TV, I think that's the message that you should take to National Treasury. The next Division of Revenue Bill must really find a way of saying, how do you coordinate this reporting mechanism? Cannot be the responsibility. No, they were saying to us, they have to establish a department or an office within the municipality specifically for reporting purposes. So now, I mean, the municipalities, with the meager resources they have, we can't, what you call, allow that. We must. Our understanding is that the intention of this reporting is that it must be coordinated somewhere. Whether it's going to COCTA, for COCTA to ensure that then you report to other people. It cannot be what you call the responsibility of a small municipality, for instance. Just the last comment that I would like to make is some, what you call, provinces, for instance, provincial departments of COCTA or local government, whatever they are called, and national and provincial treasuries. They have offices they call municipal infrastructure, MFMA, what you call, offices, for purposes of coordination. And those are very weak structures, you know. In some, what you call, municipalities, maybe they might be strong, but all that I'm trying to say is that we also need to strengthen that part, because we can't think that at this level, at national level, we'll be able to do everything. It is not going to happen. You know, something that really, what you call, inspired us in the doom that we thought that we encountered in the Northern Cape, we went to Engwabo. Engwabo, people were speaking about intergovernmental forum there. At a district level, you know? I don't know how many other, what you call, areas have that, those district, what you call, a forum. So how many other areas they have that kind of that? Because if they work at that small, what you call, a level in individuals, they're not going to be able to do those things. So clearly, I think that in terms of policy, these issues are there. But the issue is implementation. And someone, Comrade Sauga, and someone must be responsible for coordination of these things. I mean, the things that are there, not new things that, I mean, those what you call, in terms of intergovernmental relations, they are there. But the issue is implementation of this.
So that's what the way forward is, that you didn't have time to respond. Okay, and I just would really request that you give us in writing these responses. Some questions, I think you could have commented, all of you, from each question. Would really like you to do that. Today is the 17th, it's Tuesday. Can we ensure that at least by Friday we receive those responses? We also realize that this meeting has not really exhausted. We'll get the responses. They will not mean that we have really exhausted the discussion. We would find a way of continuing with this discussion. I think that if I'm correct, on Tuesday next week, what will be the date, the 1st of September, we still have a discussion on specifically on the municipal infrastructure grant, especially with respect to the building of the school, what you call stadiums and all those kind of things. So we're still going to continue to engage with you, and would also like Salga and FFC to attend those meetings, but you will get a formal invitation.
On that note, Chairperson, can I have 5 seconds? Can we please urge that under COCTA, all these gentlemen come together and ladies and come back with a collective response as well to the challenges that are faced generally in capacity building. I think that will be very helpful. And maybe COCTA should take the lead in convening this meeting.
In fact, in this coordination that we're talking about, we're not going to say we want coordination. We're giving you, in 3 months' time, would want to have a report back, a feedback, in terms of what is being done to coordinate this capacity building. So we think that COCTA correctly is there to initiate this role. Please, you come back to us if you're encountering any challenges, but we'll give you a date on which we'll want feedback. We will want an official feedback in this kind of a structure, but we'll want you can give us feedback for whatever challenges in the process you are encountering. Well, thank you very much.